What's up, everybody? Thank you for joining us. Second episode, Diamond Discussion Podcast. My name is Joe Stumpo. This is Mike Caliendo with me. And Mike, I got some things to talk about when it comes to this Pete Alonso drama. Being a Yankee fan, outside looking in, Steve has made this clear, right? It's going to go one of two ways, in my opinion. Pete's going to realize he wants a deal, and he'll basically come back, right? Or he stands pat and he signs elsewhere. I think what Steve did at Amazing Day was 100% correct. He called him out, Boris. He needs to be called out. I think he needs to be held accountable. And when he said these negotiations were tiring, it says a lot because he just went through that whole negotiation with Soto. $800 million, and we're talking about 25 to 30 million for Alonso, and it's becoming crazy. Scott Boras has a track record of doing this with his clients. So what do you feel is going to happen, Mike? Do you think he comes back? You think he takes a bigger discount than what was offered the first time? Or do they work something out where he gets maybe like a 4 or 5 year deal?
All right. First of all, I want to start this off by saying I am so sick and tired of talking about this Pete Alonso drama. It is driving me insane.
Oh, you sound like Steve Cohen.
It's driving me nuts. And I'm not even in a negotiation room. Look, as far as this goes, I think it just came out not that long ago that Pete's camp and Cohen or Stearns have been back in contact with Alonso. I also read something earlier that Toronto apparently has a deal in place, and it seems Pete is a little reluctant to sign it, and I think that has to do with what happened at Amazing Day. That's apparently what's circling around. I don't know the truth to it, but that's the rumor mill at this point. If that's the case, he is absolutely coming back, because if he had a deal in place with Toronto and he's holding off because he wants to see what the Mets do, if they're going to, and he said this in the beginning, that he would give the Mets the last chance to work out a deal. I don't know if that's still true. As far as Cohen's comments, though, regarding Boris, I am so happy he did that. Because, listen, we could trash him on here on the podcast and across all of social media and everywhere. What is that going to do? Right. I can't remember the last time that an owner put Scott Boras in check, because, some of his tactics are just exhausting. I mean, before a guy even hits free agency, we already know there's three mystery teams and no one's even talked to the guy yet. You know, his tactics are just, listen, they're old, we're bored. At this point with him, with all his free agents and some of the guys that have kind of lost money, Pete is probably going to be another one. Another Met that lost money was Michael Conforto, because he turned down a pretty decent deal from the Mets, and at this point he hasn't made up for it with his little 1 and 2 year deals that he's been signing.
And he missed the season due to it.
Yeah. So this whole Scott Boras is so against working out extensions. I mean, it's kind of getting old. If the player really wants to go to free agency like a Pete apparently wanted to, it's just, I don't think it's the best interest for the player anymore, and it's so dragged out. I mean, what are we, 2 weeks away from spring training, and Pete Alonso and Alex Bregman are not signed? I mean, this is just ridiculous, but I am just so happy that Cohen kind of was honest. He didn't give you like a political answer and just dance around it. No, he kind of got straight to the point and said what was real, and you can't not love that as a fan, as a Met fan at least. And, I'm sure every fan base across the board would want their owner or their GM to kind of call him out on his stuff, because it's just old now.
And for the fans that were chanting, bring back Pete,
I didn't like that.
From the fans?
Yeah, I didn't like
that. Well, here's the thing. I was more happy that Cohen wound up saying what he said, because it put those fans in their place a little bit. Like, hey, we haven't been sitting back and not doing anything. They offered him two contracts. So the 7 for $158, he probably should have took that, right?
Without a doubt.
The 3 for $70 was still a fair offer.
considering what the other first basemans on the market got this offseason, absolutely.
Right.
He was getting paid more than Christian Walker.
Correct.
Listen, Christian Walker is not the home run hitter Pete is, but overall, you can make the argument that Walker could be potentially a better player than Alonso. He's won 3 straight gold gloves at the position, and it's not like he's a slouch at the plate. He hits, you know,
right.
He does. So there's an argument there.
And now in Houston, he's got that short porch in left. I mean, he could do damage there.
Yeah, I think, you know, with the distraction, I don't want to go too deep into this, but with the distraction of the Soto signing and the Pete stuff and all the signings that the Yankees did, I really think the Houston offseason is kind of getting pushed to the side. I think they had a really strong offseason. I really like what they did. And in the wake of losing Kyle Tucker, they still seem to have managed to keep the status quo and being a contender in that division. Now, what I want to get back to with what I didn't like about the whole amazing day with the fans chanting "We want Pete," that part I didn't like. I thought that was like kind of cool. The fan base was showing their loyalty to Pete, which is fine.
Which is fine, yeah.
And look, I want Alonso back on this team. I've been adamant about that. And just because I don't agree with how this is all drawn out does not mean that I don't want him back on the team. But what I didn't like was when Cohen and Stearns first entered, the room started to boo. Now, my problem with that is, you know, the Mets fan, and I could say this because I've been living through it, we have been starving for a rich owner and a very intelligent baseball mind that David Stearns is. And now we have it, and they're putting Boris and all his BS into check, and the fans don't like it? Why? I understand that we want Pete Alonso back, but this is also what you want, because I necessarily don't think it's really the Mets or Pete really to blame, so to speak. I mean, look, we can blame Pete for turning down the 7 for 158, because I don't believe Boris was his agent at the time. And
no.
Then he hired Scott Boris, so we knew what he wanted to do. But I think it's Scott Boris. He is the problem in this situation. And he's been the problem even last offseason with Snell, Bellinger, and Jordan Montgomery. And now the same thing is happening with Alonso and Bregman. It's the same story over and over again.
Yep, and it seems to be the age, right? That 30-year-old age, it kind of blocks these long-term deals from getting done. He was offered that deal. He was 28, Alonso. So that would have brought him to 35. Now, let me ask you a question. If the Mets offer him a 5-year deal, that brings him to 35. Do you think Cohen goes 5 years?
No.
I don't.
No.
Because he would have did it already.
Yeah, the only way I see that happening, I would say the base contract is probably going to be the 3-year deal. If they go 4 and 5, it'll be team or vesting or mutual options. That's the only way I see a deal for Pete going to 5 years. I just, like I said, Walker didn't get that and a couple other guys. I just don't see it happening. And then you also have to imagine, too, as far as Matt Olson, if you want to compare contracts with him, you know, you look at his deal, and I think he's only making about 20 or 21. So Pete, essentially, with the deal he rejected, the 3 for 70, essentially is going to be making more money than Matt Olson. And again, you could argue Matt Olson
is a better player.
Is probably a better player. So I just don't understand how much Pete really thinks he's worth. So
and he's younger than Pete.
He is. So
it's going to be interesting. I mean, you got to look at it this way as well. Cohen has lost $300 million running this team because he's got so much money that he could use out of his personal savings, whatever it is. And it's not because he's a bad owner. He wants to win. So he's doing whatever it takes. And to see those fans booing was ridiculous. I mean, the Wilpons should have gotten booed that way. I mean, if you're Alonso, you turn down 2 deals. What do you expect now? You think they're going to come back and give you more? No, they're going to give you less. They're not going to give you more for turning down 2 contracts. I mean, like I said, if Pete thinks he could get something more, great, go for it. But at this point of the game, like you said, spring training is 2 weeks away. Where do you think you're getting that offer from? Even if the Blue Jays have an offer in place, take it. Because the Mets aren't going to match that offer, probably.
Well, I don't know if that Toronto... I don't know what Toronto's offer looks like. I don't. But I can't imagine it's much stronger, if it's even stronger, than the Mets 3 for 70. I don't see it after the Santander signing. Even though Toronto has been throwing major money at just about everybody, and they're just, you know, we joked about it, I believe, on our first right. show that, you know, they're not even the bridesmaid at this point. It's just, it's insane. But I don't think they're going to go too much over if they have. I mean, I'm sure the details will come out eventually. The other thing with Pete, though, there's been rumors that the Angels have been interested, and supposedly they offered him $100 million. Listen, at the end of the day, I think Pete wants to play for a contender. I also really do strongly believe that he does not want to leave the Mets. I think he knows what he has here, you know, and with him, I mean, you know, look, he's not the guy, from what I've read and from a lot of things I've heard from other podcasts and things like that, that Pete's not like that guy in the clubhouse that like you go to when like you want to rally up. Like, that's Lindor's kind of job. Lindor kind of took over for that. But if Pete could be, you know, somewhere in the mix with trying to adapt to this new culture. I don't know exactly what goes on in that clubhouse. I'm not there, unfortunately. Believe me, I wish I was. But, you know, he wants to play for a contender. You know he wants to win because he's a gamer. You see that in him. He wants to win at everything he does. I mean, look how serious. And listen, I know people give him a lot of criticism for it. It's funny in a sense, but look how serious he takes the home run derby.
Right.
He wants to win. So I don't see him going to a team where he doesn't have a chance to make the playoffs. I just don't see it.
And like I said, if he thinks a deal is going to come from somewhere else, great. If you got $100 million offered to you by the Angels, you're not getting that from anyone else. Definitely so not. If he's going to take that offer and go back to the Mets with it, he's not going to get that from Steve. No. So he's going to be like, all right, they give you 5 years, $100 million. Here's 3 for $70 again. And that's it. He's standing pat. He gave $800 million to Soto, guys. Like, what do you want this guy to do? He made a fair market value offer, and that's it. And right. Pete denied it.
Yeah, and listen, for the fans out there, any side, any team you root for, the fans that are saying, that are criticizing Cohen for, you know, signing Soto to this major contract and then kind of like pushing your homegrown guy to the side, listen, here's the deal. Soto's market dictated how things played out. You know, I've heard fans say that, you know, Cohen kind of bent over for Soto. Listen, Cohen had to go the extra mile to land Soto because you had legitimately 5 contenders throwing just about everything they had at him. So it took Cohen going to the extra lengths to get him. So you can't compare the two because Alonso doesn't have a market that's anywhere close to what Soto's had. He doesn't have even one team remotely as aggressive that any one of the 5 teams that were in on Soto. So it's not the same thing, and to compare the two it's just not fair, and it's just really look at the two situations and see that they're just nowhere near the same. You can't make the comparison. It's just, you can't.
And obviously one of those 5 teams that offered Soto a deal was the Yankees, and I think they were blowing smoke, the Yankees. And I'm a Yankee fan.
I feel the same way, and I get ridiculed crazy for saying that.
But you shouldn't, because it's a two-way street, in my opinion. The first way is the Yankees did whatever they could to appease the fan base, and that's fine. They offered them a deal, and I think they were serious about the deal that they offered, because they still offered it to them, but Soto wasn't coming to the Yankees anyway. I think his mind was already made up.
Well, if you remember early on in the offseason, it came out that Cohen pretty much said, like, I don't care what you offer this guy, I'm going over the top. Like, so go ahead, have fun, because no matter what you do, I'm gonna beat it. So have fun with that. And I think the Yankees took that as an opportunity to say, you know what? I don't know if signing this guy to a deal like this is the best interest for our organization, because we just have too many holes. So you know what we could do? We can really make it look like we're going after him. And listen, if Soto would have chose the Yankees, then listen, the Yankees would have had to have dealt with it. It is what it is. And I don't think they would have necessarily been, you know, distraught over the fact of signing a guy like Soto, because your fan base would have went crazy. Everyone would have been happy.
And we had just got to the World Series.
Right, with him. And he was part of the reason, you know, you guys got there. And he had a phenomenal season. That duo
Korea,
with
yeah.
him and Judge was spectacular. They really bounced off of each other. You know, I think they made each other better.
100%.
Because they're extreme talents. But, you know, with my theory on the Yankees, listen, the fans that maybe kind of understand where I'm going with that are a little more understanding where I'm at. And then you get the ones that are like, there's no way, the Yankees have been spenders my entire life and this and that. Listen, that's all fine and good. The past is the past, though. You know, if you look at the way things have been in Mets world over the last 4 years, now, listen, you guys can make fun of us. You could say this. But you can't tell me that Cohen has not been trying his absolute best to get to what he wants, and that's a championship. And I'm sure it's not just one. He wants to win more than one. Who doesn't?
Of course.
But my point to that is the Mets have been very aggressive. The Lindor trade and signing. Scherzer, which that was a guy who was adamant that he was not a fan of the Mets. And look what Cohen did. He went out and got him. He spent a ton to get him. And Verlander was another thing. Verlander was the pivot after DeGrom left. And that was to kind of like, again, maybe appease the fan base. Like, hey, listen, we know we lost DeGrom, but I'm bringing you in another Cy Young Award winner. So he has done everything and put his best foot forward to try and land and build the team that he's, you know, essentially building at this point. And, you know, it's exciting. It's exciting to see because this really hasn't happened for us since, I want to say, about 05, 06. That was the Pedro Martinez, the Carlos Beltran, the Paul LaDuca, and then they ended up trading for Delgado a year later, Billy Wagner, and all these guys that they brought in. The Mets haven't done that in almost nearly 20 years. Obviously, we had the Wilpons and all the Madoff stuff that went down, so it prevented that from happening. But over the last 4 years, that's basically what this has been as a fan base. Like, I don't want to say we're reliving like 05 and 06 again, but it's brought back that excitement that I haven't felt in a really long time.
And you should feel that way because, like I said, he's literally using his own money to get things done. And he doesn't care about making money with this team. He's worth $25 billion. So he's like, you know what? I will do whatever it takes to bring a championship here. And that's got to be rewarding to hear as a Met fan. And those guys that were cheering against him is just ridiculous to me. I mean, yes, as a baseball fan, a Met fan, you want Pete to come back because you want him and Soto in that lineup with Vientos and Lindor and Nemo. That's a strong lineup right there. Yeah. You don't want to lose that production because people are saying, oh, if we lose Alonso, Soto's there to make up for it. Understand, but you want that in there with Soto's numbers. You don't want that to subtract. You want him in the lineup every day.
Well, if you look at it now, the Mets lineup without Pete, I mean, the only thing that I guess sort of makes sense is you would have to slide. If the roster were to stay the way it is, because the Mets have come out and said that they would, you know, look more to the younger guys, the Acuñas and the Mauricios when he's finally healthy, the Beatties, the Vientos. So, you know, they're looking to pivot that way. But, you know, listen, there's been rumors about Ryan Mountcastle from Baltimore. There's been rumors about Spencer Torkelson in Detroit. You know, so they have other options that they're looking at. But right now, with the way the lineup looks, I mean, you're practically sliding Brandon Nimmo into the four hole, which, that doesn't work. That does not work. Brandon Nimmo is not a four hole hitter. He's just not. So to have him as your cleanup, you can't do that. And I don't want to see that. With Pete, you eliminate that option, and it just makes your lineup that much deeper.
Exactly. And if Pete doesn't resign, you got to put Nimmo number one, right?
No.
To lead off?
Lindor is the leadoff guy. He is not moving from that spot until until age maybe catches up with him when we get to that point. But Lindor is your leadoff, and he is not moving. No way.
And then Vientos is your cleanup hitter?
So I have... listen, I would love to see Lindor Soto back-to-back. I think that tandem would be great. But I think we're in a somewhat of a sensitive spot with Vientos because, listen, he had major success last season. And it happens all the time. These guys go into sophomore slumps because, you know, the pitchers figure them out. And, you know, there's a lot of more tape on these guys. So, for me, to protect Vientos, I would like to see Lindor Vientos Soto.
Okay.
Just so Vientos has that protection and he's going to get better pitches to hit. Now, would it take away from production from Soto? Yeah, maybe a little. But it just, to me, decreases the risk of maybe Vientos falling into that slump. But in the same respect, I think with the leadership of Lindor and now what Soto's going to bring with how hard he works and all the craziness that he does behind the scenes that, you know, we don't see, you know, I think he's going to be fine. But maybe just to protect him, to... like I said, limit the chance of maybe a sophomore slump. Put him in a position where he's going to see the best pitches possible.
Yeah, I agree with that. And Vientos had a monster year last year. I mean, without Soto.
He was so good. So, and he was clutch.
to have that in the lineup, whoa, that's like,
you know what it yikes. Was with Vientos? I think he had the fire lit under him that he needed to get going, and that was the Mets signing J.G. Martinez and then pretty much leaving Vientos off the opening day roster. I think that lit a fire under him that he needed, and you saw when he came up, when they called him up, I think in May or whatever it was. I don't know if it was his first game. I could be wrong, but I know somewhere within that first couple of games that he was up, he had a walk-off home run at home.
And oh, wow. Oh, yeah. He was just
totally... You saw it, too. He just came up, and he was just ready to go. I think he needed that. Listen, I don't know if that was the Mets' goal, was to sign JD so Vientos gets fired up. I don't think that's... But that's where we ended up, and I think that's what happened. And I loved it. You know, it you want that guy who's hungry, and that just made him hungry. It made him starving. You saw it when he came up. And he said, you know what? I had a chance to be the guy. They went out and signed somebody else, and I lost my spot. If I get back up there, I'm not going back down.
Right.
And that's exactly what he did. He was phenomenal last season.
Yeah, he was a big piece of your success getting to the NLCS.
Making
the playoffs in general.
A lot of clutch hits. He was very good for us. Very good. And I like what I saw from him. And I'll be honest, you know, out of the big prospects that we have had coming up, I know, you know, when we traded for Acuna and Gilbert, you know, we obviously had Beatty. I actually thought Vientos might have been the odd man out in that situation. It obviously seems now that seems to be Brett Beatty. I was very high on Beatty. I thought he was going to be good. And you know, listen, he still has a chance. He's still very young. Still has an opportunity to figure it out, but he has a lot of stuff he's got to figure out. He's got to tune it up defensively, and he's got to fix the bat. Whatever it is that he's got to do to get that done, let's hope that what it is, maybe Beatty needs that fire start to happen for him. You know, maybe he, you know, given what happens with the rest of the offseason, if we bring back Alonso or make a trade for one of the guys I mentioned earlier, you know, and maybe Beatty doesn't make the opening day roster. Maybe that lights the same fire that Vientos had.
Yeah, I was going to say, if Alonso comes back, that's going to change a lot of things for Beatty.
Yeah, because if you think about it too, if Mauricio is healthy at this point, we're probably not talking about Brett Beatty even being with the organization, I think. Because if Mauricio is healthy and you could slide him into third base, I think he could pretty much play all around the infield if needed. So I think that would eliminate Beatty from the equation. Now, obviously, Mauricio's health and what went on with him. I mean, he showed such good signs when he came up. He had a fire to him. And it seemed like he just, like almost how Acuna looked when he came up. It just, dude, this kid like fits. It's working right now.
And I think if anybody needs a fire lit underneath them, Jeff McNeil needs a fire lit under them.
Yeah, I
what happened to him?
I don't know, man. It's sad to see to an extent because, I mean, this guy won a batting title a few years ago.
He My was point, so good. Exactly.
He was so good. And, you know, even Brandon Nimmo, as much as I praise him, this new version of Brandon Nimmo, I'm not necessarily crazy about because it seemed like he brought down his walk percentage and he's starting to hit more home runs. And listen, that's all fine and good, but I think the best version of Nimmo is that guy that's seeing 8-9 pitches in an at-bat, exhausting a pitcher. You know, I want that Brandon Nimmo back. If you add that to this team, and I think Soto's going to have an influence on that, so I think we might see it with Nimmo. If you bring that guy back, I can't even imagine what this lineup is going to do.
See, now, that's a good point that you bring up, but you wouldn't want to see him in the one spot?
Nimmo?
Yeah.
I
know what you're saying about Lindor, and he did great in the one spot, and being in the one spot, you see more at-bats.
Yeah.
Naturally. So, and obviously, Lindor is a way better hitter than Nimmo. But if you're going to see 8 or 9 pitches and work the you know the count, and then you got to deal with Lindor and Soto and Vientos,
it seems.
Would you make that?
I see the point, and if Nimmo was the old Brandon Nimmo from I want to say about 2 years ago, then we could maybe have this discussion. But I still think Lindor in the leadoff spot is far superior than any other option at this point. I mean, he just, from the moment he got moved into that slot, he flourished. And that's when he kind of went off. I also think Jose Iglesias being brought up around that same time, he was a big influence with the team. He was a very positive influence in the clubhouse. And, you know, listen, he brought just fun and excitement to the team. I mean, he released a hit single and performed it after a Met game. I thought that was hysterical. I mean, when have we ever seen something like that? A baseball player releases a song and then gets to perform it in front of his home crowd. I mean, that was hysterical, man. Yeah. And also incredible, because I thought Iglesias brought a lot to the table when they brought him up. And,
yeah, energy-wise, he brought a lot of energy.
And it was perfect timing, because the Mets had just dealt with that Jorge Lopez stuff when he threw his glove. And
yeah, walked
that.
Off the mound.
And then
the
that
mound.
Was the move that brought Iglesias up. So that just, he was just the right guy at the right time for what they needed. And it just completely revamped the clubhouse.
Now, where do you see Nemo in the lineup? Is he
with
a nine hitter?
With or without? No, he's not a nine hitter. With or without Pete?
Let's do both.
Without, I mean, unfortunately, I think as of right now, with the roster currently constructed, he probably slides into the cleanup spot, which I really don't like.
I just don't see that.
I don't either, but at this point with the lineup, with what you have, it's kind of maybe your best option. With Pete, I think he falls into the five hole, because I think you put Pete at cleanup and then Nemo to follow, which I think would obviously help Pete. Not that he's going to get a crazy amount of better pitching with Nemo hitting behind him, but if Nemo, like I said, if he returns to the Brandon Nemo of old, then you have a guy now where, you know, maybe you want to kind of get Pete out on a couple of pitches, and maybe it opens up more pitches to hit for him, because now you got a guy that you know is going to fight off pitches, good pitches, take good pitches. And, you know, so I think that brings a different dynamic to the team. But with Alonso, I think Nemo belongs in the five slot.
Okay, that's a pretty good way to look at it. For me personally, I don't see where he fits in the middle of the lineup. Like you said, four, five, or six. To me, he just seems like a prototypical leadoff hitter. I don't know.
He does, but Lindor kind of eliminated that.
Stole that from him.
Yeah, I think he just eliminated that conversation altogether. And I'm not saying it's an unfortunate thing, because to have Brandon Nimmo hitting five, I think he's more, listen, the Met fans, we all adore him. We do. He's a hustler. I mean, the guy sprints to first base when he walks, you know. He like I say, he's a hustler. He plays hard. And even when he was playing center field, now, I think his days in center are done, but when he was playing center field, year by year, you saw him improving, improving, improving. I want to see that version of him at the plate. I want the old version of him back. The center field Brandon Nimmo that was not hitting 25 home runs. I'm fine with 17, 18, with a .385 on base percentage at the five slot. I'll take that every day of the week.
Yeah, and that's gonna be big for them. So I guess we'll see what happens whatever happens with Pete. I guess it's going to determine how this lineup gets played out.
I think we might have something in the near future. I think now that the Mets and Pete are talking again, I think what Cohen maybe said over the weekend might have resonated with, hopefully, Boris, because this guy's angle's got to be fixed. But maybe it might have resonated with Pete a little bit. And, you know, who knows? But I think this saga might be finally coming to an end. And listen, for the good or bad, at this point, it's just, let's rip the Band-Aid off. Let's rip the 17 Band-Aids we have on right now, because that's what it feels like. You know, let's get this over with and done, for better or worse, with however this plays out. I just want it over with. I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Yeah, I hear you. It's a very frustrating situation because, like I said, you want to see the guy come back. He's homegrown talent. He's 35, 40 homers every year. 100 RBIs. I mean, to lose that, it would be pretty significant to lose.
It is, but in the same respect, as much as I love Pete, and again, like I said, I want to see him come back, you have a guy that is showing the signs of declining. And
right.
He could be on the way down. So I don't know how his career is going to play out. I think his best case for him career-wise is staying in New York.
Right. I agree. And Cohen is making people realize, the fans at least, he may not be back, so get ready.
Yeah, and he's been very transparent about it. And, you know, again, what he said the other day at Amazing Day really solidified that. And I can't disagree with what he's doing. I just can't. As much as the fan in me wants to go nuts, you have to look at it logically. And I think everything that Cohen said, I think it was right on the head. And it's kind of what most of us are really thinking. I mean, this whole Scott Boras thing. I mean, did you see this thing about, if Pete had signed one of the contracts with the Mets with his opt-outs, that the Mets would have to pay him if he chose to opt out?
Yes.
What?
I listen.
What do you mean? Listen, I understand a buyout, but what is that?
That's purely Boras. That's a Boras move.
What are you trying to come up with? Like, stop trying to reinvent the wheel.
The wheel, yeah.
Ridiculous negotiate. What is that? So we're going to lose you and pay you? No.
And
that's absurd.
That is ridiculous. But the 3-year deal for 90, I think, that Boris's camp went to the Mets with, was an opt-out after every year.
Yeah.
Why would the Mets do that? That doesn't make any sense.
It's not in the best interest for them. And also with the stipulation that you're still going to have to throw him some more money to walk out the door.
On top of it, yeah.
I don't know. When you have guests at your house, do you pay them to leave? I mean, sometimes you want to, but I mean, do you?
No, it's
that's
like
insane.
I said,
that's ridiculous.
He's trying to be so different that it's actually hurting him, Boris.
He's lost some guys some money over the last few years. I'm pretty sure Bellinger rejected a deal, like I mentioned before.
Conforto
lost some money, and now Pete's also going to lose some money. So, I mean, enough with this like Mickey Mouse stuff. Just
let's get and Montgomery it. Too. He's got that $25 million option that he's picked up already. But if he has another bad year, he's not going to get $25 million again.
No, definitely not. But I think Montgomery's a little motivated, and I think he took that option despite Arizona's ownership. What the owner said about him, or was the GM, I don't remember. But they basically...
He said they're actively shopping him.
And he kind of insulted Montgomery. So Montgomery said, yeah, all right, now I'm taking the option. Now you got to pay me. So if not, trade me, whatever it is.
I'll do the same thing.
I think he's going to have a bounce back season. I don't think Montgomery... I don't remember exactly what his market was last season, but it was way over what I would even consider doing. Now, listen, I'm no GM. I'd love to play GM, but I'm no GM. Now, look, Montgomery has had some decent success after leaving the Yankees. You know, he pitched pretty well in St. Louis and then in Texas, won a championship. But for a year and a half to throw a ton of money at a guy, I just didn't see it.
How it happens.
It's crazy. I mean, it really is. I hate to bring basketball into a podcast like this, but this was like when the Knicks, I don't know if you remember this, in the early 2000s, they signed the guy, center, Jerome James, to a ridiculous amount of money. And the only reason why they did it was because he had one good playoff series.
Yep.
Most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. It almost to the degree reminded me of that. It wasn't that severe. But a year and a half of finally, you know, maybe figuring it out, maybe you turned the corner, to me wasn't enough to throw a boatload of money at this guy. It just wasn't.
Now, I'm not going to ever take anything away from Carlos Beltran, but he had that monster playoffs with Houston.
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure that Mets gave him that money based on that playoff run.
Listen, that absolutely helped.
It happens a lot.
But
a lot of
Beltran was a rising star.
Oh, 100%.
He was a Gold Glove caliber center fielder. He had won Rookie of the Year with Kansas City. You know, Beltran was the next and up and coming guy. He was a switch hitter. He could steal bases. He could hit home runs. He could, you know, score a ton of runs. Beltran was almost one of those complete package five-tool players, and that postseason run, I think, obviously put him a little over the top. It only increased his value from a guy who already had value. You know?
Right.
Montgomery, you know, before leaving the Yankees, he really didn't have a crazy amount of value. I mean, what did the Yankees trade him for? Bader, straight up, right?
Yep.
I mean, that kind of tells you everything you need to know at that point. And I know Yankee fans were, like, miserable when that trade happened. I don't know if you were one of them.
I was on the fence because I knew we needed outfield help.
Yeah.
But to give up a lefty at that time was kind of shocking. But it kind of worked out in our favor, I guess. You know, Montgomery wasn't going to sign a long-term deal here. So it made sense, I guess, at the time, you know?
Yeah, I don't think Montgomery showed enough in a Yankee uniform to really say, like, all right, we gotta ink this guy
as
soon as we can, you know.
His playoff outings weren't good.
No.
He couldn't get out of the fifth. Sometimes he couldn't get out of the fourth.
Yeah, and then, listen, he went to St. Louis. He had some success there, and then he went over to Texas the following year, like I said earlier, and won a championship and pitched well in the playoffs, had a decent stretch.
Pitched really well.
Listen, he did earn himself the opportunity to get a pretty big deal, but as far as going over the top, at least what they were asking for at the time, I can't remember off the top of my head, but it was way over where, again, if I'm GM, I'm not even looking at that.
I know. And he wasn't even injury prone or anything like that. Was never on the DL. But to ask what, $27 million I think he wanted per year? I thought he was a 4-year, $80 million type of pitcher. $20 million a year. Not too long. 4 years is a decent amount.
Yeah, that would be pretty fair, I guess. Yeah, I guess I would have been comfortable with that.
And 1 for 25 was pretty fair.
Yeah, and
because it wasn't long term.
Montgomery also, from what I remember, I believe he changed when he went to St. Louis. He changed his pitch strategy. He was throwing, I think, a lot more sinkers, and you know, he changed up his repertoire a little bit. He, you know, changed percentages and all that. So I think that was a part of his success. You know, listen, I think Montgomery's going to have a really good year. And, you know, obviously with Arizona adding Corbin Burns to the mix now, I also don't think he's going to start the season in Arizona. And if he does, it's not going to last very long.
And Montgomery's problem as a Yankee, he didn't throw his fastball enough.
Yes.
That was his issue. Too many curveballs, too many sliders. And he would get into counts where you're like, oh, all right, this is a good fastball count. And he's still throwing that hook. And it got him in trouble a lot of times, which is why the Yankees traded him.
Yeah, and, you know, I know the idea was floated out earlier in the offseason about the Mets maybe taking a flyer on him. And now, look, I mean, if you want to give Jeremy Hefner another project to master, I mean, by all means. Because if anybody could fix somebody, it seems to be Jeremy Hefner.
And he's a starter by trade, so I think that would have been a decent move for the Mets.
It could be. And listen, I don't think that's off the table. You know, I know a couple more pitchers are available as of today or a few hours or earlier. Michael King.
Just
become available.
One of my favorite Yankees. I was sad to see him go when they traded for Soto, but I totally understood what we had to do to get him. So if that's one guy I could see the Yankees bring him back, if they ever wanted to, I would be open arms for Michael King.
I mean, that would be pretty silly, though, to trade him away and then trade for him again within about a year of each other. That would be pretty funny.
But the Padres are literally fighting over $500,000. It's amazing to me.
I'm glad you... Now, listen, they have a lot of issues going on with ownership. And,
yes.
You know, so I think that has a lot to do with it.
Family issues,
yeah,
fighting, it's crazy.
There's a lot of issues going over on in San Diego. So, that, you know, listen, that's unfortunate because, you know, you don't want to see these premier teams that have now built something to now maybe fold because of things like this. And it is an unfortunate situation. Now, I understand that they're looking to potentially move Dylan Cease as well. I don't know if they're looking to move both or just one. I'm not entirely sure. I think you and I are kind of on the same page here that we think now this dispute over $500,000 might have caused a rift between King and the ownership, or King and the organization at least. And maybe ownership and the organization realizes this is just not a guy that we're going to be able to pay. So let's try to get value for him. As far as I understand, with Dylan Cease, they're asking prices really high. You know, they want to bring back some young talent, some young bats, I believe. You know, so I don't know exactly what they're asking. From what I understand and how I see it, I think Baltimore is kind of a perfect fit in that aspect. I think for either one of those guys, I think Baltimore would be at least my favorite to land either one, because they have a ton of talent. They do. They have a ton of young talent they could offer up. But if San Diego's price is too high on Cease, then I don't think he's getting moved. And now if Cease's price tag is so high and you got a guy like Michael King, who's, I think, a little younger,
mm-hmm,
and had a better season than Cease last year.
Yeah.
If Cease's ceiling, if Cease's, you know, deal, what they're looking for is so high, I mean, how much? King's has got to be worse.
Right. I agree.
So, you know, to me, I think Baltimore, like I said, is probably the favorite to land either one of them. Do I see the Mets, you know, at least checking in and talking to say, absolutely. How do you ignore either one of those guys? You
right.
You know, look, the Mets pitching staff, I know we've joked about it off air, on air, whatever you want to call, about the Clay Holmes and the Frankie Montes, all the projects that Jeremy Hefner has now taken on. I'm a lot more optimistic about what he can do with these guys because of what I've seen him do over the last 4 or 5 years, give or take, with some of these guys that he's brought in. I've mentioned them in the past, but... how many more projects do we really want to add on for this guy?
I know. It becomes like almost an impossible task.
Right. That's why I'm not really crazy about the Montgomery thing. Listen, if I think there's anybody that could do it, I think it's Hefner. And in Jeremy, we trust, you know.
Right.
I'm starting that trend with the Mets fans.
But wouldn't you feel more comfortable dealing with guys that are starters by trade instead of guys like Clay Holmes and maybe injury-prone guys like Montes? Like, you don't know what's going to happen and what you're going to get out of these guys, you know. And let me tell you something. If it works, it might be one of the craziest baseball stories of all time, that he was able to transform these guys into top-tier starters, especially Clay Holmes. If he gets something out of Clay Holmes, wow.
Which I think he's going to. And I know, like, you know, Yankee fans keep laughing at us for signing him. But if you look at his numbers outside of the blown saves, and yeah, I get it. He had a
It's not that we laughed at you guys for signing him. It's that we're
converting him to a starter.
Right.
Which, listen, that's all fine and good. But, you know, listen, I'm not saying the talent level is the same. But Michael King did it. And that wasn't a joke.
True.
That's not a joke. What, because the Mets did it? You guys find it funny? I disagree with that. You know what? I know you guys have been laughing at us for years. You've been laughing at us my entire life. Like, I get it. Fine. Like, look, growing up as a kid in elementary
You've given school, us every reason.
No, the Wilpons have given you every reason.
Let's I don't get care.
That clear. Let's get that clear. The Wilpons were the problem, and they always were the problem. And I could sit here all day for 12 hours tearing them apart because they were just atrocious.
Yeah, they were.
We can't do that, and I don't think we're going to get people to listen for that one.
No.
But, you know, like I said, how many more projects does he want to take on? But, like I said, Clayton Holmes was not bad as a reliever.
No.
He had the blown saves, and it seems to be the thing that you guys all remember, rightfully so, because I think he blew like 12 games there. But not all of those games were his fault. The defense hurt him. He came into situations where the reliever before him left him a mess. And, you know, it was what it was. And there was a lot of outs that should have been made that would have ended games that these blown saves wouldn't have been so high. Listen, he's not completely innocent. He, you know, he definitely made some mistakes. Obviously, he blew 12 games. You know, obviously, some of them are his fault. But, you know, I don't think it's as big of a joke. Now, listen, if I end up with egg on my face in this situation and Clay Holmes completely is just, you know, not the guy that I'm maybe expecting to be, and maybe, you know, Hefner can't get what he can get, you know, I'll wear that. That's fine. I'll wear the egg on my face. It is what it is. Like, I have no problem standing on what I've said in the past and owning up to it if it doesn't work out.
But to save him, you could bring him back to the pen.
You could, and that's not a terrible option. I mean, then, you know, obviously, I still think the Mets are going to get another reliever. You know,
they need a righty.
Yeah, they do. They do. I really want Stanek. I really would love Ryan Stanek to come back. I love what he brought to the team after the deadline deal, and especially in the playoffs, he was electric. And he was like the only like high leverage reliever we really had outside of Diaz in the playoffs.
Well, another high-leverage guy that's still available is Tommy Canley. The Yankees they're not going to bring him back. So they would have did that already. I don't think he's coming back. But the guy was pitched in New York, big-time games, playoff experience. It's another guy you could add right there.
Yeah, and then, listen, we'll get the same jokes about the Yankee leftover stuff. And listen,
yeah, but the only problem with Canley that I had as a Yankee fan, I don't know if you were following in the playoffs, he threw his changeup 49 times in a row. Jeez. He didn't throw a fastball in the World Series. He threw a changeup 49 times in a row. I mean, I don't know where that came from. If that was a Matt Blake thing and said, stick to the changeup. But it didn't work. I don't know why that was even a thing.
I don't know. Maybe he just wasn't feeling his fastball. I know he's lost a couple of ticks on his velocity over the last couple of years. You know, he's had some injuries that he dealt with. I know when he was over in L.A., I think during the COVID years and stuff, I know he was out because he was streaming on Twitch, which was I thought was hilarious. He was playing Tommy Canley, when he was hurt, was playing MLB The Show and streaming on Twitch, and it was awesome.
And he signed a 2-year deal and missed the whole first year.
Yeah. You know, I was in on some of those Twitch streams of Tommy Canley.
Oh, that's awesome.
He was hilarious. He interacted with everybody. He was really cool. Blake Snell was another guy that did that too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and Blake Snell was hilarious. He really was. Like, he, after baseball for him, even though I know he doesn't need the money because he's got deferred money for the rest of his life probably, but if after baseball he still has that itch to stream on Twitch, I mean, yeah, haha, I just made a little rhyme there, but... He was hysterical. He was very entertaining. You know, it was really fun to watch. I mean, at that point, we didn't have baseball. So, as a baseball fan, what were you doing? You were playing the video game, watching old games, or watching Major League Baseball players play against each other on Twitch. I thought it was hilarious.
That's awesome. But for other relievers, since we're talking about relievers, Ryan Pressly finally got his wish.
Yeah.
He was traded to the Cubs. He picked the Central. He wanted to be in the middle of the country. The Brewers, the Cubs, the Reds, they looked like they were all players. And essentially, it was the Cubs. He's 36, and he told the Cubs, that he wasn't going to waive his no-trade clause unless he was told he was going to be the closer, which is pretty interesting because I don't think the Cubs needed a setup guy. I think they needed an actual closer.
Yeah, they did. They did for sure. Now, listen, I don't think Presley is really going to struggle all that much. I think he's a proven guy. He's been around for a while. He's
another guy with playoff experience, big time.
Yeah, and listen, he's blown a couple games here and there, but he's also saved some big games, you know, out in Houston.
World Series winner.
Yeah, I think he's going to be fine in Chicago, but how long is his leash? Because if he maybe isn't the guy that he used to be, I mean, how much leverage do the Cubs really give him? How much leash do they really give him?
And to get back to the Cubs, what are they doing exactly? Are they going to sign Tucker? I don't see it. I don't see it happening.
I don't think so. I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, you know, look, I went to Chicago 2 years ago, and I'll tell you one thing, as a fan, the second we stepped into that stadium, and we went in the main entrance, all that, and, you know, we toured around the stadium and everything, but the second we stepped in that stadium, I felt like I was 8 years old again. It brought, like, such a childlike, like, I felt like a kid again. And I was, you know, I was with my dad, and I just, you know, he's like, all right, you want to go get food? And I just tapped him, and I just pointed to the field, and I said, we got to go see the field. And as soon as I walked up the stairs and just saw it, it just...
Yeah, Wrigley is iconic. It's an iconic field.
Incredible, the atmosphere there. So, listen, Kyle Tucker could go down to Chicago and completely fall in love with that, because I think that's what draws a lot of guys there. It was an incredible experience. You know, now I've gotten to see the two oldest stadiums that are still in existence, and I went to Fenway some time ago. But
same here. I went to Fenway.
To see Wrigley was awesome. It was one of the best baseball experiences I've ever had.
I went to Fenway in 2011. I was at a bachelor party, and this is going to be terrible. The Yankees were down 8-1 in the seventh inning, and it was hot as hell, sweating, day game. Everybody that I was with was like, it's a wrap. This is probably not going to be a win. Let's just get out of here and get ready for dinner. We get in the Uber. We're going back to the hotel. The Yankees scored 7 in the eighth, 2 in the ninth, and won the game before I even got in the shower. So that was my Fenway experience. I couldn't believe I left. I said to myself from that day, I'm never leaving a game again. I don't care if the Yankees are up 8-1 or down 8-1. I'm never leaving a game that I'm at again. And that was the worst because that's the last time I've been to Fenway. But so I had to get back and experience a full 9 innings.
So aside from the obvious question of how much I guess that sucked.
It was terrible.
To experience that. My other question would be, which friend did you punch first?
So I wanted to punch all 10 of them. And let me tell you, it was really uncomfortable sitting in Fenway. I mean, I was in center field and you were like squished. That's how I felt. But I should have stayed till the ninth inning, squished.
So I guess my experience at Fenway seems to me maybe a little better than yours. So when I went, it was 2009. It was, I believe, I want to say Mike Pelfrey faced Josh Beckett.
Wow.
Yeah, and Gary Sheffield was on that Mets team. And the Mets were down going into the ninth. Their backup catcher, Omir Santos, which I will never forget that name because of this, hit a home run just over the line of the Green Monster.
Oh, wow.
Now, that was at the time where I don't know if it was the first, but it was in the first couple of years of the instant replay being a thing.
Okay.
And that home run had to be instant replayed. Now, us in the stands, we were on the third base side, but, you know, obviously more down the line in left field. So we had a clear shot of it. It was a little hard to tell the naked eye, but we had the screen right in front of us when they did the replay, and we saw it go over, and we were sitting in a section that was pretty much all Met fans. And
that's awesome.
When we first saw the first replay of it going over, we went crazy.
That's amazing.
And it was one of the greatest experiences I've ever had at a baseball game. That is in the top three for me of the best Met games I've ever gone to, and it was at Fenway Park. And I'll never forget that experience. Omir Santos, you are a legend in my opinion for the rest of my days. So that awesome. Was one of the best experiences I've ever had.
Well, I'm glad that you had a better experience than I did.
And hey, listen, the Mets beat the Red Sox. You had to be happy about that.
Oh yeah, of course. Anytime the Red Sox lose, I'm all for it. So getting to the Texas Rangers, John Gray, who signed a 4-year deal a couple of years ago, has said he's willing to close.
Really?
For the Rangers. Well, they just lost Jose Leclerc to the A's. But what's interesting about that is if DeGrom gets hurt, you got to kind of slip Gray back into the starting role, I think, if you're Texas.
Unless Gray is absolutely dominant as a closer.
Right.
Listen, first hearing that, I'm a little taken back, but my reaction to it is that could be a very dangerous thing because I think Gray has the stuff to be
a
very good closer. His career, so to speak, hasn't panned out as expected. He was very highly touted when he was coming up in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, he had some success, but he also pitched in Colorado. So
right, which is tough to begin with.
Really done. But his numbers really weren't terrible out there. And then he went to Texas and, he's had some success. He's been pretty decent. I know he's been riddled with some injuries here and there. I feel like I say that about everybody, but everybody gets hurt. But
yeah, it's just the name of the game.
Yeah, but I initial reaction to that is kind of like, wow. But at the same time, that could be a very dangerous thing. I think he really does have the stuff to be a very electric closer. So that'd be really interesting if Texas goes there.
And I was actually shocked Texas didn't make the playoffs last year after winning the World Series.
World Series hangover.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. They didn't even make the playoffs. So that could be interesting to see what they do. I do think they win the division this year. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that. Yeah. I think they bounce back. Yeah.
Well, I think the Seager was hurt a little last year, if I'm not wrong.
They had a lot going on.
Simeon struggled a bit. I think he was also hurt.
Aroldis Garcia didn't play too well. He was a little bit of a slump, too. And they didn't hit at all. They couldn't hit fastballs. They were the worst team in the AL against the fastball. I actually read that the other day, yeah. And Bruce Bochy, the manager, he actually alluded to it. He was like, I can't believe we can't hit a fastball. It just seems to be the biggest problem offensively. They couldn't hit the fastball.
Well, maybe they're praying that Tommy Canley signs out west so he'd throw them changeups 50 times in a row if they can't hit the fastball. But
like I said, in that division, I see Texas taking it. Seattle didn't do anything again this offseason. I thought they were going to sign Alonso or at least make a pitch to Alonso. That never happened. And they've just stayed stagnant the whole free agency period. Houston, they teetered like we were talking about. They lost a couple pieces. They lost Tucker, but they got Christian Walker. So, I don't know. I think they're pitching.
Listen, don't sleep on Isak Paredes. I think that kid's going to be a monster.
He's got 30 homer power. He could hit. Not for average, but he's got power.
Yes.
But to me, Houston's pitching is going to be a bigger topic than their offense. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, they have a, I don't want to say under the radar, but they have a very sneaky good starting five. Headed by Framber. When the news came out that they were shopping Tucker, they also had come out and said that they were potentially shopping Valdez. So I guess they kind of just saw maybe what the best package they could get in return, and it was maybe one or the other. I was praying that Framber was available because I wanted the Mets to be all over that. I don't know if they could have got something done. I don't know exactly what Houston was looking for. I haven't really looked too much into it. After Kyle Tucker got traded, I figured, especially with the return they got for Tucker, I'm like, they're not trading both of these guys.
So no, yeah.
I just stopped my hopes and just, let it be. But, oh my God, Framber Valdez as a Met, I think would have been incredible.
Yeah, another lefty, that would have been... That's not a project. Would have been a legit two-starter right there.
I think you put him as your ace at that point. I mean, you have the option of...
Over Senga?
I think you have that option, yeah. I think you could.
But what are you telling Senga at that point? You're not the ace?
No, yeah. It is what it is.
Well, interesting.
I think, listen, you could go either way. I mean, it depends. It depends on where these guys were comfortable. But me, personally, I would have headed the rotation with Valdez for sure.
Now, let me ask you another question. Another guy that's out there, Jack Flaherty.
No, absolutely not.
Oh my gosh! I didn't even say go to the Mets yet.
Nope, I don't want him. I don't want him.
Well, he reached out to the Tigers and said he's open to a reunion with them. I guess he liked his time there. I actually thought he would have been a good fit for the Mets.
Look, he was very good when he first
came up. He's not looking to be an expensive option right now. His market has been zero. So, I don't know. You could probably get him on the cheap.
I mean, I would have to see what maybe he's asking.
I mean, teams are literally going to see Scherzer work out. You mean tell me that Jack Flaherty is not worthy?
I'm not really crazy about the Scherzer thing either. Flaherty-Detroit, Listen, I like it. I like the move late. I liked when he went there last year. I think that was a nice fit for them. I'm just not crazy about him. You know, he's had some really good success, and then he's had some pretty bad moments as well.
Right. But I feel like he could be a good four or a three. I don't know. He's a middle rotation type guy.
To me, where he lands, if the Mets were to maybe look at him, I could see him more of a maybe deadline deal, depending on where he goes and if the team is out of it. But obviously, this guy's maybe not looking to sign. I mean, he's just coming off the high of winning a World Series. I don't think he wants to go to a team that's not in contention. Now, what's actually unfortunate, too, because if you got to think, if Detroit doesn't trade him, the way Flaherty pitched for them last year.
Do they go farther in the playoffs?
They might have. They had a nice little 1-2 punch there between him and Skubal. So
yeah.
I don't know why I'm so reluctant to say no to that. I know Flaherty is a solid starter, and you know he's obviously better than Frankie Montas overall, career-wise. But I don't know. Something just in my gut just says, no, I don't want him. I don't know.
And that seems to be what's going on with his market. I mean, there's only been three teams linked to Flaherty: Giants, Blue Jays, Cubs. I can see the Blue Jays needing some pitching. I don't know about the Giants. They got a pretty decent five starters going on there. They just got Verlander. But I could see him going to the Blue Jays. That wouldn't be a bad signing for them.
I think he fits with all three of those teams, to be honest. And it's crazy that I'm so easily, well, penciling him in with other teams and saying he's a good fit, and I'm just so no with the Mets. You know, I don't know. I just, like I said, in my gut, I just know. But him with one of those teams, I think, might work out. I don't know what he would be like in New York. I know he pitched pretty decent in L.A.
He was okay. He wasn't great.
Yeah, he wasn't what he was in Detroit. That's for sure. But I don't know. There's just, for me on my team, there's just something saying no. I can't put my finger on it, if I'm being honest.
Now to get some Yankee news going on. Aaron Boone said today, it's a 3-man race for third base. DJ LeMahieu, Cabrera, and Peraza, who's been MIA, injuries, just hasn't had time to come up because of other players that were on the roster, Gleyber Torres being one of those guys at the time. Ryan McMahon is now a guy they're looking at third base from Colorado. I wouldn't mind that at all. I was actually looking at another guy that would be interesting for the Yankees, Brandon Lau from Tampa.
Yes.
He's got pop, lefty, plays a good second base. Tampa was kind of making some, I don't know, inklings, saying that they were, you know, willing to trade him. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I do think the Yankees could be a good fit with McMahon. He's got some pop, and he plays good defense.
I have been saying this for about 2 years now, that the Yankees should go after that guy. And I know Colorado has been pretty reluctant in moving him. I think he would fit perfectly with you guys. That left-handed pop in Yankee Stadium, plays a solid third base, and also get this man out of Colorado. He deserves so much better, because there are a lot of average baseball fans that really don't know this kid.
Right.
And he is a solid third baseman. He's been a pretty decent replacement for Arenado out there, and Colorado has been very reluctant to move him. You know, I read that too. I think it was yesterday it came out or whatever, that, you know, maybe Colorado is maybe a little more open to moving him. Listen, if you're the Yankees, there is, to me, that's a no-brainer. You got to jump all over that.
He is a .245 career hitter, so that's, but I'm just so sick of seeing these under-average offensive, you know, players. I want guys that hit 270, 280. I really do. Maybe I'm a snob. I don't know. But that 240 always translates into a slump, a big one at some point in the year. That's just how I feel.
Yeah, listen, I don't disagree with it. I think baseball's taken a turn over the last maybe decade or so. You've seen averages are coming down. You know, obviously, especially in the Spider-Tac year, like that was averages were at an all-time low. K rates, I think, were at an all-time high. You know, the averages dipped a bit more. And, you know, obviously they're focusing on the Billy Beane money ball, the on-base percentage stuff. And listen, that's all fine and good. But listen, I'm a guy that likes action, and I'm a little old school and maybe a little more traditional than most fans around my age. It seems the day of the maybe 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 guys all hitting around 330, 325, that seems to be gone now. Because I guess, you know, they're focusing so much more on base percentage and actually getting on base. But, yeah, no, I agree with you. I'm like I said, I'm a little more traditional, so I like the higher average guy. I like the guy that hits 310, 320. I love that. I don't know why we've just kind of dismissed
got away from it. Yeah.
I think it, you know, listen, you got to think, too, up until the rule change, I mean, the stolen base was deteriorating.
Right.
For a certain amount of time. Teams weren't really, you know, they were a little reluctant to maybe take the chance of stealing the bases.
I
know,
but now you can because of the pickoff rule.
Yeah, listen, that completely vitalized the game. I mean, could you imagine, not for nothing, and I don't want to go down this rabbit hole because we could be here for a while, but could you imagine if Ricky Henderson had these rules?
Oh, my gosh. 100 stolen bases every year.
Which I do have to say on the show, you know, Ricky did just pass over the last, what was it, last month?
Couple of weeks, yeah.
That really hit home. That broke me a little bit as a baseball fan because, you know, I'm only 32, but I got to see Ricky play more towards the back end of his career. And my two favorite baseball players of all time, I have a pitcher and a hitter of my two favorite guys. My pitcher is Nolan Ryan, and my all-time favorite hitter is position player is Ricky Henderson. I got to meet him one time, and he is exactly what he is advertised to be. Speaks in third person.
Right.
Was one of the friendliest guys ever. Gave me a hug. And it was the funniest thing because it was actually during the All-Star game at Citi Field. And he just came out of nowhere, randomly walking through the parking lot, headed towards the player's entrance.
Oh, that's awesome.
Dressed, I swear to God, dressed just like Charlie Sheen from Two and a Half Men.
Oh, my God.
Same thing. And, like, I seen him, and I'm like, is that Ricky Henderson? And I'm like, I got to be seeing things, because why is he just walking in the regular pool? Like, this doesn't make any sense. And he's getting closer and closer, and I'm like, oh my God, I really think that's him.
That's, yeah.
And I just, Ricky, is that you? He goes, you know it's Ricky, baby. You know it's Ricky, baby. Comes in, gives me a big hug. Dude, at that point, this was 2014. He was a rock.
That's
awesome.
He
was solid stone. And I just look at him, I go, Jesus, Ricky, you still look like you can get out on the field and still do it out there.
Probably could.
And he looks at me and he goes, you know these young bucks ain't got nothing on Ricky. And then he kept him. That was one of the greatest experiences of my life because Ricky is one of my favorite baseball players of all time. You know, favorite position player of all time. I was very devastated when he passed, and I just, you know, I wanted to bring that up.
It's so young too. Yeah. Crazy.
Horrible. You know. So rest in peace, Ricky Henderson.
Definitely a legend. Yeah, another absolutely. Good Yankee and Met. Good Yankee and Met.
Yeah, listen, he had a lot more success with you guys. He was there for a little longer. That was, listen, him being a Met, 99, 2000, that was what introduced me to him. And the flair that he brought and, you know, realizing as a young kid, like seeing him, he was like, you know, he was an old man when he was with the Mets. And it was like, wow, like who is this guy? And
right.
Then, you know, my dad started telling me about him. And then, you know, I started as, you know, I got a little older, started researching him. And I remember when he got his 3,000 hit, which I think was San Diego. Yeah, he was just so fun to watch, you know, and like I said, I only caught the tail end of his career. So I wasn't seeing 80, 90 stolen base Ricky. I was seeing, you know, 20, 30 stolen base Ricky, and he was doing that in his 40s. I mean, this guy was unbelievable. You know, listen, if you guys are bored out there and after, you know, maybe we're boring you a little bit, go watch some Ricky Henderson
highlights. Yeah. Oh my absolutely.
God. It's just incredible. And he was just so funny. He brought such life to the game. He was, so, and like I said, I got to meet him once, and I'm so glad that I did. And I know they say don't meet your heroes or the guys you look up to, but that was one for me that I was so happy he was exactly what I wanted him to be.
That's awesome.
And he lived up to that Ricky-ness that he had and brought, and he was awesome to meet. And, you know, that was one of those meet your hero stories because he was, like I said, exactly as advertised, exactly what you saw is what you got, and he was... You saw he was just, to me, in that 30-second interaction I had with him, he was just a genuine dude, and it's really a shame, man. You know, it's
yeah, we lost him thing. Way too young.
Yeah, unfortunate thing.
But as far as the Yankees, like I was saying, I could see them trying to trade Stroman to Colorado, maybe for McMahon.
Do you think Colorado? I don't think the Colorado's going to go for that.
Well, here's the thing: two of their starters last year pitched 4 games. Their top starters: Herman Marquez.
Yeah.
And Anthony's Sensatella. 4 games. So maybe you offer them Stroman. He's a ground ball pitcher in Colorado. You could use that. Offsets the contracts a little bit between McMahon and Stroman.
Yeah, I don't know off the top. I don't know what McMahon is making. But
I think he's owed $44 million over the next 3, if I'm not mistaken.
Listen, for me, like I said, I think that is a perfect piece for you guys.
Yeah.
I think he
passed 3 years, $45 million he's owed. So that's $15 million a year.
For what he brings to the table, he brings
that's solid what I'm saying.
And a pretty solid bat.
So.
Listen, he could hit you some bombs. And.
And Colorado only has to eat 1 year. Maybe we tell them, hey, listen, eat the whole thing. I don't know if they'd be willing to do that. Would be nice for the Yankees, listen, I'll tell you that much.
If that's what it takes for the Yankees to do it, I don't know how you don't pull the trigger immediately. Now, I don't think it's going to be Stroman for McMahon straight up.
No, there'll be other something going on.
Because I saw something about that, and I saw like a mock trade on it, and now this is where the speculation is, Colorado shopping this guy. I saw it was, I think, Stroman and Oswaldo. Don't even know if that gets it done. I think they need maybe one more piece, maybe more of a mid-tier prospect.
Maybe like Everson Pereira, the outfielder.
Actually, yeah, I think something like that might get it done. I don't know what Colorado, because Colorado's been very reluctant to get rid of him, and I can't understand why. They've been horrible the last couple of years, and this has been your only big trade piece, and you just don't want to get rid of him. Which, listen, he's maybe drawing some sense of a crowd. You
know, and everybody says, I know the last time we spoke, Javi Baez was a terrible contract.
Yeah,
I think Chris Bryant is up there. It's brutal.
Yeah. That,
what a disaster.
I think this needs to be like studied in a scientific lab, because what happened?
We're talking about the third baseman for the Cubs, wins a World Series, monster player, goes to Colorado, flatlines. Literally.
Yeah,
complete, you know, 180.
And listen, before he left Chicago, he was falling off a little bit. I mean, he had such major success early. What did he win Rookie of the Year and MVP in the same season, right?
But this was like a complete different player.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
He actually went to Colorado and his power dipped. How do you do that?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen that before.
You hit pop-ups to shortstop and they go out.
Yeah, I mean,
I think 1 year he finished in like single digits home runs. And I don't even think it was because of injuries. I just think he just was that bad.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I think that needs to be studied in a lab. I think, well, outside of Rizzo, I mean, that core out of Chicago is really just Baez, Bryant. And listen, Rizzo didn't completely fall off the hill. He's just, I think, age is catching up with him. But, you know, the core guys out of that 2016 championship team, I mean, what happened?
I know, it's brutal. Terrible.
It's crazy. I mean, listen, Javi Baez doesn't help his scenario. I mean, he's swinging at... He's basically finishing his swing sometimes on an off-speed pitch that hasn't even broke the dirt yet. I mean,
yeah.
So that's a little kind of more understandable. He's a free swinger, and he does what he does. Brian, I just don't know what happened. And, you know, I really did like that Cubs team in 2016. I mean, I was rooting for them.
Oh, yeah, 100%. You know,
and they were... For the most part, they were very likable. I mean, how do you not like Anthony Rizzo?
Yeah.
You know, Baez, too. He was very electric. He had that big beef with Amir Garrett, which I thought was awesome. And listen, it got a little out of hand at times, but that beef between the two of them
was awesome. I actually thought he was going to be a good Met, Javi Baez. It just never panned out.
Hey, listen, he had a couple of moments with the Mets, nothing really crazy, but you know, I think that all went downhill with the thumbs down stuff. And I think he just brought a negative energy to that team where it just long term it wasn't going to work. And listen, the Met fan base almost went crazy when they didn't re-sign him. You know, I was very indifferent. I didn't, for what he got, I thought he got a fair deal out of Detroit. I thought it was pretty reasonable at the time. Obviously now he's maybe the new DB Cooper with how he's robbing them blind. But I mean, what happened? You know, and I didn't really want the Mets to sign him at that point. I was, if we had to, okay, but Listen, I thought he got a fair deal. And if the Mets did sign him at that time for what he got in Detroit, I think it was what, six for 140. I wouldn't have been so turned over if the Mets.
Which was actually fair for his production at the time. Because he had pop.
Yeah, it was reasonable.
Great defender. We all knew that.
Yeah, listen, he's a phenomenal defender, but if you watch some of his gaffes in the field, they are hilarious. Some of the things he's done. But he is spectacular in the field. But, yeah, I don't... he's another one, like I said, it's a little more understanding than Bryant, but then Bryant's in Colorado.
You want to compare, like, the two worst contracts right now, actively, one in the AL being Baez, and one in the NL being Bryant.
Yeah, I agree. I think there are two potential... And listen, there's another one... You mentioned this to me, Bogarts with San Diego.
Oh, my God. Brutal.
Three contracts that you just can't move.
Can't move it. It's impossible. No one's going to be able to take that on or want to if they could.
And you know what would be crazy? If Baez was a Met and actually signed that deal and he came back to New York and is doing what he's doing now, I think Cohen would have cut him by now.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
I don't think he'd be a Met anymore. Like I said, his production value is atrocious, and I really thought he brought a lot of negative energy when he came over here. And listen, he's very fiery and electric, that's fine, but like I said, he was a part of that whole thumbs down thing, and he was obviously a part of that big Met-Yankee game when Stanton and Lindor were going back and forth. I just thought it brought maybe the worst out of Lindor, and you see now that Baez is obviously not a part of this team anymore. You see a difference in Lindor. I'm not saying it's completely, on Baez, but I just thought he was more of a negative influence on Lindor, and I agree. Yeah, I didn't like that. So
before we wrap it up, Mike, just one quick thing. We haven't talked about Bregman at all, so I just want to touch on him fast. Boris supposedly reached out to Houston. I guess they're trying to renegotiate. Where do you see that going? Do you think he goes back to Houston? I personally think they don't work it out, and he goes elsewhere. What do you think is going to happen?
I mean, now with these new developments that have come out, that Altuve will move to left field, you move Isak Paredes to second and Bregman in third.
There's also rumors that Bregman offered to play second.
He did.
Yeah.
Listen,
so you could keep Paredes at third if you want to.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, you got to see who's maybe the better fit at each position. I mean, I think maybe Bregman could be a little better at second. I don't know. But if that's the case, and Altuve really does move to left, you can't tell me Houston didn't kind of get better in this situation.
Even if they didn't get better, they definitely stayed the same. Like, they filled their holes, and they're ready to go. Well, I'm not going to count them out. Listen, I know I picked Texas to win the division. That's just me trying to think outside the box.
Until Houston loses it, to me, they're still the favorite. They're still the favorite, and they haven't done anything that necessarily says that they're not. Like I said, I know they moved on from Kyle Tucker, but listen, you still got one of the baddest men on the planet and Yordan Alvarez in the middle of that lineup.
Very true. And Altuve.
Yeah, and listen, as much as we give Altuve his stuff for, obviously the cheating and all the sign-stealing issues, you can't deny the fact that Altuve is a gamer and a hitter. And,
of course.
It is what it is at this point. He's proven maybe before or after the cheating that he still can hit. He does. But
Me personally, I think Boston's going to swoop in somehow.
To me, that's the fit. I think Bregman and Boston, it's just one of those things that it just makes sense in my head. And I can't put my finger on exactly why. Listen, I think he's going to perform very well. He's going to play a great third base. And I think the green monster, it's going
to
only...
Yeah, he's got great numbers in Fenway to begin with.
Yeah, he does. So, not just in my head. Obviously, there are numbers to back it up. But there's also that extra, my gut saying about with Flaherty with the Mets. It's almost me saying the same thing with Bregman in Boston. I think that is I don't want to say a match made in heaven, but maybe close. But outside of Boston, how does he not go back to Houston?
Right.
If Houston is serious and Altuve is serious and, he's going to move over and now Boris is getting more in contact with Houston again. I don't know. This seems to be the thing. I don't know. We're hearing that the Lonzo camp is back in talks with the Mets and now Boris's camp is, Bregman's camp is back in talks with Houston.
One word. Desperation.
Probably.
That's literally it. Yeah. You're not getting any of your offers.
Not anything.
Where are these offers coming from? They're not coming from anywhere.
Yeah. So, listen, we're coming down to the final hour of the offseason, and there's still a lot of guys out there, a lot of relievers that we mentioned earlier, and some big names, some bats, some pitching. I mean, you know, maybe these next 2 weeks could be almost like a mini little winter meetings to end everything. Let's just get everything. Maybe that should be a thing. If you have a substantial amount of guys that are still out there this late, do another winter meetings. Do something. Get these guys together. Get these agents, these teams. Get everybody together. Figure this out. Because this is just... It's driving me crazy. I just want to see these teams. I want to start predicting. I want to see where all these divisions line up. And, you know, we can't almost do that because there's still so many big names that can go to a team that could completely change the dynamic of divisions and predictions here. So, listen, let's get all this done. We want to start predicting stuff. We want to, you know, move on with the offseason. The offseason's over. We should be excited that spring training is around the corner. So, guys, just figure it out. Everybody, let's figure something out. I don't know. You guys want to come on the show and we'll all talk. I'll yell at everybody. Let's get this done.
And as a Yankee fan, it's getting too close. We've got to fix the holes that we have. Third base, I kind of wish we had one more arm for the bullpen, but I think we're good there. Speaking of bullpen, before we sign off, the deal for Kirby Yates was finally released. Oh, 1 year, $13 million. Nothing deferred. Shocked?
Whoa, I don't believe it.
He's getting a full paycheck. Oh, wait. Just to make a joke here, they're doing renovations at the Dodgers ballpark, and they said that all the construction workers are getting their paychecks deferred to 2050. So they're not going to be happy. They're going to wait 30 years to get paid. So
I don't believe it. There's got to be a deferral in this somewhere. It's just that seems to be the Dodger way now. Sign a contract, you're deferring some money.
Well, when you deferred $1.3 billion, you could give a guy $13
million. Yeah, I guess so.
But, so that's enough for tonight. We talked about a lot of stuff. We thank you guys for listening. Please follow us on Instagram, Diamond Discussions 25. You could also email us with any topics and news that you want us to talk about, DiamondDiscussions25@gmail.com. Signing off, Mike Caliendo, Joe Stumpo, Diamond Discussions Podcast. Thanks for tuning in, guys. Appreciate it.